Reiki, R-E-I, means universal. Ki, K-I, is energy, like chi, right? Yeah. Except Japanese. Reiki is universal life energy that is accessible to all of us. And it's learning how to harness it, and it's learning how to work with it, and it's learning how to use it for good.
Hello, Christine.
So good to be here.
I'm so excited that you're back. For the listeners to know, we were just looking at the past year, 2023, because you've been on before, and it was almost exactly a year from now that I released that episode with you. And I'm just so grateful that we're able to connect right now in this moment together.
Me too. Especially about this topic.
Yeah, especially about this topic, which we'll be talking about Reiki and its connection to self energy and how IFS looks at self and parts. And this was something I never thought about until you brought it up to me. And then I thought, you know, that's making a lot of sense. And I'm sure after this conversation today, it's going to be like, makes total sense. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. And before we get into talking about it, part of me kind of laughs at this question that I'm about to ask you. Because I know my system kind of feels, I think, flustered sometimes when someone asks me this question. And that's because I feel like we're made up of so many different parts that it's kind of like, how do we define who we are in like a couple sentences? But what would you like the listeners to know about who you are?
Well, I knew that question was coming. And it is an interesting question because that's exactly how I think about it. I'm about to name a bunch of parts. Mm-hmm. I think that the parts that I named today will make the way that Reiki found me make sense, because I believe that it finds you. You don't find it, it finds you. And I am a retired university professor, and I actually came into contact with Reiki in 1997, which is 27 years ago, when I was in a major transition in my career, in my teaching career. And I think it's important for the listeners to know that concurrent to all of the work that I've done in a university environment, I was also teaching yoga and meditation. So it makes sense that Reiki would find me, given the parts of me that were doing that kind of work.
Right.
I left academia in 2018, and I presently, the majority of my work is in leadership development in organizations. I also work as an executive coach. I do personal development coaching, and I am an IFS informed coach as well. So IFS is very prominent in the work that I do. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Reiki, I'm a Reiki master teacher in the Yasui Reiki tradition. And I'm also a Reiki master teacher in what is called the Karuna Reiki tradition. Mm-hmm. They're different, Yasui being the oldest, the original, and the one about which I'm very proud to share in that lineage. Mm-hmm. What we know about Reiki really comes from Mikao Yasui, who invented that system or created that system. And so I'm kind of a stickler when I teach Reiki. I'm kind of a stickler about my students knowing that tradition and knowing the formality of it, because there is a formality to it that's very much rooted in history, that's quite beautiful and really, really powerful.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And a couple things came to my mind as you were just sharing all of that was, before we came on together to record this conversation, I noticed a thought come into my mind about you and the fact that the listeners may not know, but I've known you now for, oh gosh, maybe over 2 years now. Because we met in our IFS level one training, and we've been connected ever since. And I know that you have that history as being a professor and then working in executive coaching. And then as I was reflecting and kind of meditating before our conversation, yeah, something just kind of washed within me and through me of like, isn't it interesting that you hold like this yin and yang of almost like right brain, left brain passions. And you just named that as you were working as a professor and kind of more of, I think of that as more of kind of like the left brain studious,
yeah.
You know, and then you were also doing yoga and meditation, and then Reiki found you. And I can really resonate with that personally. You know, I worked at a university for 10 years and I was doing I was leading guided meditations, you know, offering that to staff and students. And I also went and did my yoga, you know, teacher certification. And I'm glad that you named that, because that was something that I kind of wanted to name, that it can be this both, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it not only makes sense, the degree to which my training in and my affinity for healing arts has spilled over and into my work. I can't separate them, right? And vice versa. I am foremost a teacher, whether it's a teacher of, you know, strategies for up-leveling your leadership or strategies for up-leveling your spiritual energy or that connection, it's the same vessel. And there's not a day where Reiki isn't somehow prominent in my life, present in what I'm doing. But there was a time early on in my career where I did feel that there was a split. You know, the parts of myself that lived in that world didn't quite match up to the academic self. And then I realized, wait a minute, you teach about human relationships and human communication. And part of what you're teaching about yet can't name is the energy that's infused into both of those things. And we're always dealing with energy, our own and the energy of others. And we're relating to it. And we use words to make it easier. Reiki, REI, means universal. Ki, KI, is energy, like chi, right? Yeah. Except Japanese. Reiki is universal life energy that is accessible to all of us. And it's learning how to harness it, and it's learning how to work with it, and it's learning how to use it for good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like so many things going through my mind right now in relation to IFS, and which we'll talk about. And I did a presentation one time when I was working at the university with a class. They asked me to come in and talk about mindfulness and its connection to meditation and all of that. And I made it Star Wars themed in the sense of the Force. And kind of, and I didn't know about IFS then. I didn't know about, you know, this word of self energy and all of that. But I was just kind of, I had just had a memory of that as you were sharing kind of the meaning of the word Reiki and how even like it is, it's everywhere. And maybe it's called different things and it's portrayed in different ways in movies or just the way we talk about stuff. But this is something that is within me. It's within you. It's within everybody.
Yes.
And it's within, would you say, like everything on this planet?
Yes. And Reiki is just one way in which we can access that energy. I like to say that the Reiki practitioner is simply the vessel or the conduit through which the energy then is shared in the name of healing. Right. So I think one of the hardest things that students grapple with when I teach Reiki is they're afraid they're going to do it wrong. They're self-conscious about offering a healing because they worry about who they are as a healer. And it's like, no. That part needs to relax back because you are merely the vessel through which the energy flows. You can't do it wrong. Now, there in the Usui Reiki system, which is the most traditional system, each of the hand positions of Reiki corresponds with a particular organ, gland, meridian system. So there is a science behind it. But there are times in the laying on of hands where you realize your hands need to go somewhere else. That may or may not correspond with a particular system in the body, but you just sense that intuitively. And I really do believe that it's important to know why it is that the hands are where you're placing them. That science behind it is really critical and important. That said, it's getting out of the way, getting yourself out of the way so that you can be that conduit. And that's where I think practitioners, and I can only speak for myself, deeply and truly feel self-energy. Although I don't know that I would have named it that prior to becoming an IFS practitioner.
Right. Yeah. So kind of putting it together through these different lenses, but seeing where they overlap.
Yeah.
And so we've already kind of started to have this discussion already about a little bit about the history of Reiki and what it is, but could you share a little bit more in regards to what is the history of Reiki? What is Reiki in the sense of the history and the science? And then we can get in about the actual practice for people who maybe are listening to this being like, I don't know what this looks like. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. So I'll talk about it in two ways. As I said, Rei, REI, universal, ki, life energy. So Reiki is a hands-on healing modality in which the practitioner becomes the vessel through which this universal life energy gets shared with the client. Now, in more advanced levels of Reiki, I can initiate a Reiki session from a distance. Sometimes I can't place my hands on someone. They may have an injury. So, or, you know, the hands are not even necessarily necessary. What's important is that the practitioner is this vessel through which the energy flows. So if you were to look at the way in which a traditional Reiki session is conducted, you would see that it's very similar to working through the seven chakras. I don't know that that was the intention, but when you look at the placement of the 12 hand placements, they each correspond with a different chakra, which of course then corresponds with a different organ, a different gland, a different system in the body.
Right.
I also like to describe Reiki as very similar to acupuncture in theory, because again, you're working with the body's meridian system, which is our energy system, except it doesn't involve the needles. The promise of Reiki, right? I cannot promise you that it's going to heal your injury or cure your illness or whatever that is. What I can promise you is that you will feel a deep sense of relaxation and for some, a deep sense of peace. It's a very gentle, it's a very soothing modality. And it's very, very powerful for people who don't like or can't tolerate the pressure or sometimes what feels like the invasiveness of deep massage or the invasiveness of a needle in acupuncture. In other countries, and in Canada in particular, Reiki is very much valued and appreciated as a healing art that's integrated into hospital systems. Not so much here. So I have, when I first learned Reiki and I started practicing it and started working with clients, I have a long history of working with hospice patients, using Reiki at time of death, coming into hospitals to apply Reiki or to share Reiki at the time of birth. So, you know, I've had a number of clinical experiences with it, but it's certainly not as popular in that environment here than it is in other places around the world.
Yeah. And hopefully I have parts of me that are always optimistic that our culture is maybe becoming more open to these very old practices that have been put in place for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of benefits.
Yeah. And predate Western medicine.
Yeah. And so it makes sense to me as you were describing the fact that it works on the chakras, maybe not necessarily, like you said, purposefully did they lay it out in that sense. But again, there's so many overlaps to so many other ways of looking at the body and our energy, the meridians, the chakras. I mean, just all of this stuff, it has so many similarities. And so would you, when you say that the healer or the Reiki practitioner is the vessel, is it that the person receiving, are they receiving the person's energy, or are they helping to activate the receiver's energy?
You mean, are they receiving my energy?
So yeah, I don't know if I worded that right. So it's like, yeah, is the person, like, let's say they're laying on a table. So the person receiving the treatment, are they, I guess, receiving the Reiki practitioner's energy as the healer, or is the healer helping to invite access to the person's own healing energy?
So what I would say is that they are not receiving my energy. If I become the vessel through which this universal life energy flows and then is received into the receiver, and then Reiki sort of interacts with their energy. I like to say that Reiki is wiser. It's far more intelligent than we are. Right. So if you're receiving Reiki, let's say you're coming because you want to work on your migraine headaches, that your intention is to use the Reiki for your migraine headaches. That may or may not happen. As you're receiving it, I trust that the Reiki is doing whatever it needs to do to promote your healing in the way that is most necessary, which may or may not have anything to do with your migraines. That Reiki is wiser and more intelligent than we can even fathom. And so we trust that it's doing the work that it needs to do. This is another way in which practitioners who are very new to the modality get afraid. You know, they're afraid of, oh, all my energy is being drained. No, it's not. No. You know, you're not giving away your energy. Or the other story I often hear is, I don't know if I can do this. I don't want to take in their energy.
Right.
The energy of the client. No. That's not what's happening. I'm not absorbing my client's energies and they're not taking mine. It's just the sharing, and the practitioner goes through a lot of training in order to be that clear vessel.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a really important thing that you're just sharing about this, because that's something I didn't know about Reiki. I guess what I envisioned was, and I can share my experience with Reiki now to maybe go into what I'm about to say. But so when I was like 15 or 16 years old, I went on a mission trip with the church that I grew up in, and we were helping to build homes. And I was wearing, I think, jean shorts that this particular day. And there were some, I guess, big bumblebees, maybe carpenter bees, that got stirred up in the midst of our work with materials and all of that for this house. They either one or two flew up my shorts and stung me multiple times on my seat muscles. Oh, it hurt so bad.
Yeah.
And there was a woman there who I was familiar with. She went to our church, but I didn't know she was trained in Reiki. And I knew nothing about Reiki at this point in my life. And she saw that I was in distress. And she said, you know, I have something that I'd like to do for you if you're open to it. I'm not going to touch you. And you don't need to unclothe or anything like that. She was like, would you be willing, would you feel comfortable to lay down on your belly? And I went into someone's car and just laid down on the back seat, and we had the doors open. And she didn't explain anything, as far as I remember. I just had trust in her. I felt safe with her because I knew her. to an extent. And she was like, yeah, I'm not going to touch you, but I just invite you to just maybe lay here. If you can, just do some breathing, close your eyes if that feels safe. And I was laying there again, not knowing at all what she was doing back there. And I remember being like, the pain is softening. And I remember saying that out loud and asking her, like, what are you doing? What are you doing back there? And then she did a little bit of explaining when she was done. And I was amazed. And that has always stuck with me. That memory is always stuck, stuck in my brain because it was so interesting and beneficial. And I guess then the other point that I was gonna make in regards to the story was I didn't know fully how it worked. And like I said, I never really researched it after that. And so I guess in my mind, up until right now, as you were explaining this, I guess I envisioned the healer being the healer in the sense that it was maybe her healing energy that was being given to me instead of what you're describing as like she was acting as this vessel for this universal life energy to come through her and to be an aid in my pain.
That's correct. Yes, which is why I even try to avoid the word healer as often as I can. Practitioner, I practice it, right? But I am not the one doing the healing. And it's very difficult for students who are learning Reiki to really get that. I have the benefit of having a very, very strict level one teacher, and she and her husband were emergency room attendants. And interesting, they were also very devout Catholics, and they were older in age. And the reason I mentioned they were devout Catholics is because they learned about Reiki actually from a priest, a Catholic priest. And they were both incredibly strict about learning the body and physiology and anatomy to know where those hands were going and how they would be most beneficial. But they were also very strict about correcting any language that pointed to myself as the doer, myself as the healer, which really helped me to have that part step back. And there's a great deal of freedom when that happens.
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking that when the parts of us that are taking on that responsibility, that worry of what if I'm not enough, or how can I be present for this person? And to give my healing energy, it's like you said, it's like if those parts can give space, then it just opens up.
Yeah, and it's interesting as a practitioner to see when we're sort of being that vessel for that energy to flow, and then when it encounters the energy of the client, that's when we get to see the interaction between the Reiki energy and your energy, right? And also we can sense where there are energetic blocks.
Interesting.
What we're doing essentially is we are moving energy, just like an acupuncture needle is going to move stagnant energy. So there's more freedom in the flow of your energy, which creates optimal conditions for healing, like bringing fresh blood flow to your seat muscle and
Right.
to start generating that healing.
Yes.
And right now we're talking about healing at a physical level, but there's a whole emotional level, there's a spiritual level of healing that occurs as well.
Right. And I imagine if you were, I guess, receiving the Reiki energy and the practitioner, I guess, notices. Has an intuition, would you say, or like a felt sense of a block, then would they just spend more time on that specific area of the body that they sense that block?
It depends, right? Part of this is I'm just thinking now of women that I've worked with who were really struggling with infertility. And when I would bring my hands to the part of the body that mostly that second chakra, where those reproductive organs and glands resides, more often than not, there was a very, very deep sense of there being a block there. Just a lack of, I don't know, there's something that you can feel beneath your hands that tells you, it's very intuitive, that tells you energy is not flowing here. And so that does not mean, however, that there's something physical there. It might mean that I needed to spend a little more time in the mind. It might mean that I might bring my hands back up to her head and really work intentionally into her thought system. And more often than not, then there are all kinds of reasons. There are all kinds of reasons why there can be a struggle for fertility. But in my experiences, very often it was that right now, this body is not hospitable. That was always the word that came to me. It's not hospitable right now to grow life. So, what do we need to do to create a very welcoming environment where there's no fear, where there's it's, and when you think about all of the things associated with that second chakra, this sort of this fluidity and this almost this lush, nurturing environment. There's all kinds of things that might constrict energy there, that might be emotional, that might be spiritual. Talk about burdened parts that might be showing up in a part of the body. And we might even, you know, say, we might even say, what is gastrointestinal pain really about? So it's interesting because the practitioner does. If you know, if you're aware and you're paying attention, you do pick up on, ah, wow, this area of the body, it's really flowing very freely. And then getting to places where everything feels really stuck or frozen.
Oh, there's so many things that are through my mind, you know, because I have a background in like the fascia and understanding the nervous system, and it's like all about this flow, all about this flow, recognizing blockages, inviting flow to happen again by using our hands, whether it's like dragging with our fingers, you know, up against or with the tissue and moving our fingers over our body, using therapy balls and using, it sounds like with Reiki, would you say there are some instances where the hand is physically touching the other person? And then there's some instances where it's not, but it is like hovering.
Yeah. In the traditional system, we are instructed to, it's a laying on of the hands.
So it is a touching.
It is a touching.
Okay.
And, you know, again, it's fully clothed. There's no reason whatsoever to ever unclothe. You know, that's completely, I can lay my hands on anyone in any circumstance, you know, and share Reiki. There are practitioners, though, who are trained to hover above the body. I'm not really sure about that. I can't really name what modality that is. And there are certain circumstances where you may not lay your hands on, especially if there's acute pain or a lot of bleeding, or you know, some kind of injury that would prevent you. Maybe they're even in a position where you can't get to that part of the body. Someone who's in a hospital bed. So, you know, sometimes it's necessary to hover. And sometimes, and again, in level two in particular, level two Reiki in the Usui system, you learn what's called the distance Reiki protocol, which means Reiki doesn't know time, space, geography. It doesn't know the limitations that we live by in this time-bound universe. So, and you know this, you know how powerful collective prayer is. You know how powerful it is to hold an image of someone you love in your mind that's across the world and send them good vibes and good intentions. And Reiki works in the same way, but maybe 100 times.
I love that. And that makes so much sense. And again, I just think about, all the experiences that I've had personally where I've been in, this one in particular still blows my mind, but I was engaging in a metta loving kindness meditation. And I was specifically focusing on, I think my sister came to my mind. And so I was sending it towards her, and she lives in California. I'm in, Kentucky. And I'm not kidding you. I was done with the meditation. I picked up my phone and she texted me and she said, I was just doing a loving kindness meditation. And you came to my mind. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's just instances like that where for sure. And they've done research. They've done studies on this where they've specifically have, taken groups of people. And I think they were in a hospital with similar conditions. And then unknowingly, one group was assigned for people to send them healing energy and through prayer, meditation, and the other group didn't receive any of that. And the group that had the unknowing healing energy being sent to them, they recovered. I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was significant in the sense that they saw there was faster recovery in that group than the other group. And so, yeah, I completely understand what you're saying and believe that through the power of our minds, our being, connection to this life force, that we can send that and connect that to others.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful analogy, the metta practice, the loving kindness practice, when you really are so intentional about that. Biochemically, hormonally, and neurologically, what you are secreting that beautiful hormonal biochemical bath of compassion. And those energies can travel. I think it's one of the most powerful forms of human prayer, the metta practice. And Reiki works in very much the same way. The energy of Reiki is very benevolent. It's very kind. It's very generous. It's very direct. It's very direct, meaning there's a fierceness about it. There's a protectiveness about it. It will work on your behalf if you say yes. I tell people all the time, you need to do only one thing, and that is to be open to receiving this. You don't have to do anything else. Just open to receiving it. And it can do no harm.
I also just had a thought, I've interviewed Bob Falconer a couple times, and I think in our most recent conversation, he said something that stuck with me, where he said, as humans, we tend to think that we are these floating beings in this sea of the ocean, and we're not connected to each other. He's like, but actually we're islands that are all sharing the same sea floor. And if we're just kind of hanging out on top of the island, then we can have this kind of individualistic mentality that we're also separate and siloed. But he's like, but we're not. Underneath that water, we're all connected. And so as you were describing that, I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. And people who receive Reiki will often say, aren't you tired now? Aren't you tired in giving? And, and it's, then I'll get into the whole, no, I'm not, you weren't receiving my energy. If anything, I benefit in sharing Reiki because I've got it very, very intentionally flowing through me in a way that I can really feel. So I'm made better because of what I'm sharing with you.
And so let me ask you this. Is Reiki something that is outside of us and we have to invite in? Or is it also something that is kind of, and I think this is where we can get into talking about its connection to self energy. Yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about
So the best way that I can describe it is, and I have a lot of different feelings about this, but so what makes me different from you in terms of the accessibility to Reiki, right? And those in the Reiki world will say, well, Natalie isn't yet attuned. And in order to be attuned to the energy, the Reiki master teacher would give you an attunement. And it's a pretty elaborate process where it's kind of like if you can remember the old radios that were staticky, right? And we tune them so that we can get the programming that we want. So we have a clear channel. So an attunement is attuning you, Natalie, to this universal life energy so you have access to it. So in a lot of ways, it's tuning you back in to something that's already part of who you are. So it's easy to think about it as something that's out there, right? But it's part of who you already are. You've just forgotten. You just got out of tune. This is one of the reasons why animals and children are like, I love to lay my hands on a mom's belly who's pregnant. Because that infant floats right up to your hands because it knows it's familiar. When you hold a child and you're attuned to Reiki, they will just melt in your arms. Because, and the same is true of pets. Pets are very, very sensitive to it.
This is making again more sense to me as you're describing this. And again, it's just the word I keep feeling and hearing and sensing within myself is beautiful, that we can attune ourselves again to receive this energy.
Yes, I as the practitioner, I'm not giving you something new. I'm just getting you back on the right station. Because you went off, you're a few little notches away.
And would you look at that in terms of parts? Like if you look at it now through like an IFS lens, like when I hear you saying like, oh, you're kind of staticky, what I hear through that IFS lens is like, oh, there might be parts kind of standing in between because of life experiences, legacy burden stuff, you know, stuff that we've acquired as being human.
100%. I mean, this energy is so familiar to you because it's who you are, and we resonate with it. I think it's one of the reasons why so many of us are drawn to pets and so many of us are drawn to infants because we know that they have a knowing, they have a purity of being that resonates with us because we remember it. It's who we are too. We've just forgotten. And the forgetting are all of the parts. I keep thinking about the imagery I believe we received in level one, where if you were to make a silhouette of take chalk and outline your body and then cover it with post-it notes. And every post-it note has a name of a part. And it's like when we start to peel the post-it notes away, there is what we have forgotten. And Reiki is a return to that, or feels like a return to that. One of my favorite places to use Reiki, because I've had the most profound experiences, is at end of life. Especially when the individual is dealing with what's called terminal agitation in hospice, right? So terminal agitation is many people who are dying and go through this phase of intense pain, emotional pain, whether they're consciously aware of it or not. It's very upsetting to families. It's seemingly upsetting to the person going through it. And when you come in and provide Reiki for the person who's transitioning, right, it helps them to calm down, whether they're aware of it or not. Some are lucid, some are not. But Reiki at the very time of death, Reiki at that moment of last breath, there is this very felt sense that what is here now in front of me is the body, the flesh, the essence of who this person is has taken flight. And I think I can could only have had that knowing in the laying on of the hands at that time of life.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I guess what's coming to my mind right now, again, from like this IFS perspective, would be, would you say it's inviting maybe the parts within a person that are getting agitated or fearful to kind of soften?
Yes.
And then there can be that clearing or that channeling of Reiki.
Yeah. And then what is let, I don't know, because I've only experienced as a, something just happened here in this moment of that last breath, where what's left here with me now is just the body. There's no, I don't feel any energy flowing, but a very clear felt sense that the essence, self with a capital S, that's eternal. That is no longer encapsulated or held or housed in this flesh. And for me, those were profound experiences of a knowing that I couldn't know otherwise.
And such a gift to be able to have experience with those experiences.
Yeah, and that's why I always tell people, if you have the opportunity to be with someone that you love at that time, be with them and touch them. Don't be afraid to touch them. That I've encountered so much fear in those moments. And I often felt like I'm the surrogate for the touching that the family can't give right now. And that's okay. It's enormously healing to feel connected, to feel that someone or several people have walked with you to the very precipice of that place where we can't take another step with you. As Elizabeth Kubler-Ross called it, the next great stage of one's evolution, as they step to that next place that, you know, we just don't have awareness of.
Right. And so, you know, is there something, are there things that we can do on our own if we're not able to meet with, let's say, a Reiki practitioner per se? Is there a way in which us as an individual can attune ourselves to this universal energy? Any, thoughts or recommendations about that?
Attunements are really powerful. It's funny because I have people that will say, can you reattune me? I feel like my attunement turned off. And I say, I'm more than happy to reattune you, but you were attuned. You don't have to be attuned again. And people will say, well, oh yeah, I mean, I know when to turn on and off the Reiki. I'm like, no, you don't turn it on or off. It's always there once you're attuned. It's funny. It's really parts that are coming in trying to understand something that's very difficult, if not impossible to understand, but is nonetheless true. It's almost like the truest truth we can know is that there is this energy. And that's the one thing I would say that we can do, and not having to book an appointment with a Reiki therapist or to get attuned, is to believe that we are all energy, that we are surrounded by energy, that we are all connected by this energy. And if you don't believe me, think about people you know that for whatever reason, you just love being around, because there's something about their energy that captivates you. It strikes a chord in you. That's because they are radiating who you are. You just want more of you, who you are at essence. And then the converse of that is having experiences where energetically something feels off, or something feels dangerous, or something feels, and it's like, start reading energy and be a very, very good custodian of your own energy. I call it practicing. We brush our teeth, we wash our face, we bathe our bodies, our hygiene habits. What is your energetic hygiene? How do you keep yourself in a higher energetic state? And what are the practices that are, that call out to you, that you most resonate with, that lead you closer and closer back to who you really are, but you just forgot? Because the more you resonate with that, you're naturally healing others simply by being in their presence. From a Reiki perspective, I never have to lay my hands on an aggressive dog. I can merely be in the room with an aggressive dog, being the Reiki. I have people all the time talk to me about who are Reiki practitioners who are afraid to work with animals because they think they have to. No, you don't have to lay your hands on the animal. You can be in the same room or proximity to the animal and just be it. Just be the energy.
Yeah.
I think to kind of, you know, bring us closer to why it is that we're here today is, what are your tools and practices for keeping you in self energy as often as possible?
Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking of, you know, when Dick says self energy is contagious.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So as you were describing that you don't even have to be placing hands. If we can just be present, either with an animal or with a person, if we are, as we would say in IFS, you know, in self, accessing that self energy, that can be felt.
Yeah. Yeah. And Reiki is just one modality that if you pursue it, whether it's you are a Reiki client or you wish to learn Reiki, you're just plugging into a modality that's, you know, as good as others, but it's essentially working in the same way. It's doing the same thing. It's just something that resonates with you. Yeah, that's what I would do. Is that's the one thing I would say, is to just keep reminding yourself that I am more than my parts. God bless them, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so much more here.
Yeah, that, again, there's something running through my mind in regards to, and this is, we were talking about before we hit record, another conversation of like psychedelic work, or, you know, mm-hmm. where it kind of helps the parts give space and to even then maybe shine a light on some of the things that need more attention, but to have this opening. And it's and the other thing being, like with IFS, it's known as a constraint release model, where it's bringing awareness to what are the constraints, what are the parts maybe in between. And then when we invite awareness and a softening invitation for them to give space, then okay, we're able to access that energy, that self energy, that Reiki energy, creator energy, what, you know, all of this, like you said, we are attuned to that. But when we're living through this blendedness, then we can feel that static.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know what I was going to say. I love Reiki because it's one of very few healing modalities where you can work on yourself. Mm. There's self Reiki protocol. Again, it's a great way to keep you connected to the energy.
Is there something that you can share now?
No, not really. Now, I would feel irresponsible about it because the listeners aren't, I don't know who's attuned and who isn't.
Right. Okay.
Attunement is necessary in this case, and using it in the way that we're intended as Reiki, the attunement is necessary. Mm-hmm. But the capacity, though, to lay hands, you know, on yourself, arouses so much self-compassion, so much metta. It's a very tender healing modality. Now there are, you've probably heard of therapeutic touch. Many nurses are trained in therapeutic touch. That does not require an attunement. It likely works in the same way, just that sort of contact. But again, I would say, you know, one of the things that really came through to me in our time together is this idea of Reiki really moving energy that's been stuck or stagnant, so that you are flowing. I mean, we know it's hugely beneficial to our system when all of our organs and glands are working in a way that they're receiving the energy they need to do their work. And the same is true of our cognitive abilities. The same is true of who we are as spiritual beings, that the more freedom we have in our internal world, life works better.
Right. And I was also just thinking of the saying, where attention goes, energy flows. And I feel like that's the case mentally, physically, within ourselves, as we can be with other people. And to having that, like you were saying before, being mindful of what types of ways of being are maybe flowing energy to maybe creating blocks to the energy, as opposed to being mindful of what are the things that help the energy flow.
Yes, exactly. And really, perhaps it is that becomes your first question about any challenge or dilemma in your life. How am I managing my energy? What direction is it flowing in? And how do my outcomes provide me with an indicator of shifts that I might need to make?
Yeah. And like you were just saying, yeah, that is something that is in our control. That's something we can start right now, is being mindful about those things. Well, this was such a beautiful conversation, and I'm so grateful that we were able to have this conversation. So thank you.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because when you mentioned the word conversation, I immediately thought of the way that energy is carried even through human speech. And even in the grappling of trying to name a truth that is unnameable, yet felt. And I often say, language defies. You know, it's very, very difficult to choose language to explain what Reiki is. It must be felt. It must be experienced to have the clearest sense of what it is and why it matters, and to have the clearest sense of who you are.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, before we officially end, I would like to give you the opportunity to share with the listeners about your services and what you are currently offering.
Yeah. So do you have show notes?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll put in the show notes a link to my website, but most of all, a link to my email address, because in the fall, I'm going to offer an online version, a level one training for those who might be interested in learning level one and opening it up to a much larger community.
Level one of
Usui Reiki.
Very cool. Ooh, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, now that we've got full access to modalities like this, like Zoom, it's very doable. It's something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and now we can make that happen. So it'll be a full level one training. And so if any of your listeners are interested in that, I would ask them just to email me with the word Reiki in the subject line.
Perfect. That's so exciting. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, we'll put all of that in the show notes so people can have that access to that information.
Thank you for this. I'm like I said, I just love to talk about Reiki, even though it's not easy to language, but I hope the energy was here.
It definitely was. I've been feeling it. I feel very relaxed. I feel very grateful. And I'm just so grateful for my connection with you.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you all so much for joining me today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, give it a rating, and leave a review. You can also follow me on Instagram at Natalie Deering and sign up for my newsletter on my website, ndwellnessservices.com, to receive updates about podcast episodes, workshops, and more.